This episode of the Shooter's Touch is brought to you by Forged Athletics, your go-to spot for sports-specific trainers and athletes to get connected. Visit Forged Athletics at goforgedathletics.com and start improving your skills today.
I got Shooter's Touch. Can't nobody ball like me.
I'm getting a lot of no letters. And I kept some of the letters because it was like motivation for me.
I was young in my coaching career. I did know that those guys I was coaching, this was their one opportunity.
If you really want the players to like you, just make them better.
If I want to keep playing this game, you know, as a job, I have to continue to get better at that.
You have to figure out a way to carve out some value that you have that you can bring not only to your team but also your profession.
It's really good information, and I pick up little nuggets all the time.
For me, it's all about confidence, man. You have to have confidence to be a shooter, to be a basketball player in general, and to have success. It's all about confidence. If they walk a mile in my shoes, then they can ball like I do, but my game different, not the same
with it. I travel now, y'all just change pivots. Shooters, this week on the pod, we bring on Casey Schlatter. He is an assistant coach at Augustana University up in South Dakota. But prior to that, played at Drake, as well as finishing his career at Grandview, originally from Iowa Falls, and played high school up there. And so we, as we always do, we get into the full story. We kind of talk about coming of age and how the development to the varsity level up in Iowa Falls went for him, and how his progression and his recruiting ramped up as he continued to ramp up on the floor, and some really great stories in that process as well, and then ultimately deciding on Drake, and then his experience at Drake. We've talked about this era several times on the podcast, but getting his understanding and the changes between head coaches and kind of how that essentially shaped who he is, not only as a player but as a coach, and the experiences in which that he can pull from that. And so a lot of good ones here. We hope you enjoy it. As always, Shooters Shoot.
Welcome back, Shooters. As we mentioned, we have Coach Casey Schlatter. Coach, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, you guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we're excited to get you on and get your story on tape. Just kind of getting in the swing of things here. We were talking a little off air. You guys got a couple tough ones to start with, but how does it feel to just kind of be more back to normal? Are things around the locker room and practice feel a little bit better this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, last year was a different animal, and I know everyone was going through it regardless of if you're in athletics or just school in general. I mean, at the elementary level, but I mean, we are going to places, you're in masks, can't be in a meeting room. I mean, think about doing scouting reports for a year and you can't even be in a meeting room where you're all sitting in. Instead, you're in a double queen bedroom and you're all kind of locked in looking at a little TV. And luckily we have a projector that we travel with us. So, I mean, helps a little bit, but just some normalcy like that, having pregame meal in your hotel room is another one that's new. I mean, Coach Billiter here at Augustana does quite a bit of routine stuff. And all of a sudden we go from eating as a team, talking to scouting report, to you're eating with your roommate. And that's the person you're spending all the time with anyway. And you're kind of stuck and isolated away, but you know, it's been great this year. I mean, we're selling regular season tickets, hoping to be up around our regular crowd, you know, 2,500, 3,000 people at our games. And that's definitely a relief after this past year.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, obviously a struggle for players around those times. You know, last year was obviously a tough year, but you know, coaches go through some stuff too. So yeah. I mean, even as just a fan, I know Brian and myself are definitely looking forward to more normalcy where maybe we can even be in the stands for a couple games this year. So we're hoping that that keeps going. But, you know, as we do here on the podcast here, Coach, we like to kind of start from the beginning. So give our listeners a little bit of an idea about you, you know, where you're from, where'd you grow up?
Grew up in Iowa Falls, Iowa. Ended up moving to Ackley when my mom got remarried. So, you know, I had Coach Berkey was always kind of in my ear a little bit. Oh, yeah. to go to AGWSR. I had a stepbrother that attended there, but went to high school in Iowa Falls kind of the whole way through. Played for Kyle Hutchinson. I mean, most people know the school is Art Sadoff and Nick Collison, and it's exactly how it should be known, right? I mean, Art Sadoff had 54 rebounds in a game, and Nick Collison is the ultimate role player in the NBA who's there for 15, 16 years. And then you forget about how the fact he's one of the best Big 12 players ever. So, you know, kind of grew up through there, trying to get back to state, to be honest. I mean, was kind of the whole way my basketball journey started, because I was going to a lot of games in fifth and sixth grade. I know we were talking off air a little bit about, you know, Brett Putz, having listened to that. And my brother was the same age as him. So I'm seeing him, Mike Collison, Terrell Foster, who's now a D-line coach at Upper Iowa, but played football and basketball at Ellsworth, played at Winona State. Like, seeing those guys grow up, and shoot, John Rave, can't forget him either. I mean, he played tight end at the University of Minnesota. But seeing those guys kind of grow up and the culture, like, you hear the Nick Collison stories. I was a little young to ever see it. But Mike Lindemann, Prentice Lofstead, and you know, Nick, they go and they win and just dominate. And you want to get back there. And Iowa Falls, you know, has not been back there. And seeing that journey and kind of going there, and like I said, Brett Putz broke my heart when I was a sixth grader, because at Fort Dodge High School, he literally drills like a 30-footer, and it was over my brother. So every time my brother brings it up, I let him know he's part of the reason we haven't been back to state. But then I kind of got there myself, and, you know, I got to play as a freshman, you know, played with Kate Olson, who was a really good four-year player at Iowa Falls, Derek Bradley, Josh Perkins, some local guys that, Adam, I'm sure you're probably pretty familiar with some of those names and all that, but, you know, never quite got over the hump that was Waverly Shellrock. We kind of got lucky, or unlucky, I guess. They go through their run where they're this powerhouse, and we're a 3A school by one student. So we get kind of caught in that, and, you know, had a great experience though. Can't thank Kyle Hutchinson. Brock Jacobson was around a lot. And then Brad Bridgewater, you know, as guys that, you know, made me grow as a player and a person, but kind of helped me understand what it's about being from a smaller town where people really care about that stuff. Like, you are the show. Like, Friday nights, it's packed. Tuesday nights, it's packed.
Right. What about growing up, you know, as a young kid? You know, I've heard a couple stories from our research team that, you know, you were always the kid in the front row at the basketball games, at least. Was there ever any other sports in your life, or was it always just basketball?
No, I actually played football, but I was always lanky and slow. So you could throw me at tight end and I might be able to make a catch. Yards after catch was not a stat that I'd ever want to see, because it might have honestly been negative.
You were wearing the uniform, but not maybe contributing the most, huh?
I was that's the sad part, a blocking tight end, and you're looking at a kid who was about 5'10", 5'11", in seventh and eighth grade, about 135 pounds. So I wasn't blocking anybody. I just played in middle school. And then obviously PJ Norm is one of my best friends. And his dad, Pat Norm, was a longtime football coach at Iowa Falls. So I was around a lot, just never really played because I started growing. I mean, I grew from about 6 foot to 6'4" from my eighth grade to my freshman year. And then it was about 6'4" to 6'7". And pretty consistent, about 6'9" by the time I left. So I was just not the right frame. Loved other sports, just wasn't the right frame. And like baseball with AAU basketball just didn't work. And I knew I wanted to chase basketball. So it was kind of one of those things, you make a sacrifice. It's not necessarily the sacrifice you want to make, but kind of the one you have to make.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, we are in agreement that you made the right decision, I think. So, well, let's maybe talk about, you know, if we jump into high school here. So, obviously you mentioned that, you know, the growth spurt kind of hit, right before high school. Is that right? Or, start growing freshman year. So what was that like, you know, making the jump from eighth grade to freshman year? And then were you playing a little freshman ball JV, or was that varsity time for you?
Actually it's a weird story, and Hutch loves this story because he absolutely ticks me off. But like I started playing AAU. With the Iowa Barnstormers, which was like Josh Oglesby, Jared Utoff, Wes Washburn, that team. Nice. Seth Tuttle. I mean, can't forget him. He was one of the better ones too. And he's still in the game coaching as well. But started playing them the spring of my eighth grade year, and actually broke my wrist, my left wrist up in Milwaukee 2 weeks before team camp. And
so I played my first team camp with a cast in that like 6-inch memory foam on it and could only take about one dribble with my left hand. And Hutchinson calls me and he goes, hey, yeah, you're going to be on the JV for team camp. Like, we're going to take you, but like, I don't know how much you're going to play. Like, going to need doctor's clearance, all this. And I was a competitor. So like, I remember calling my brother specifically, to be honest, getting off the phone, like, Austin, I'm going to Ackley. Forget this. I'm going to AGWSR. I'm leaving. Like, and he goes, calm down. He goes, you just broke your arm. So I go and I play JV and somehow play well. And it's actually like it's funny that you and I coaches talk about it. That's the first time they ever saw me to where I really got on their radar. It's because there's this kid out there who's playing with a cast, like can't dribble anyway, but luckily, I mean, can still shoot the ball. And I never had a problem shooting it, I guess. And the fact that I would get shots up, I'm not going to say they always went in, but you got them up. But no, so I kind of did that and played JV the first weekend and all Saturday, and they play like 6 games or whatever it is. So I got moved the second day. There were some older guys gone and Hutch moved me up and I did okay. And then the next week I was playing with varsity, and kind of from then on, I got lucky. I had a guy like Joshua Perkins who really took me under his wing. I mean, he was a senior, he was all district football player, had been all conference basketball before. And, you know, I kind of cut into his time, but he kind of took me under his wing and really mentored me. And from there, it just kind of took off, and Hutchinson, you know, really was able to coach me to grow. And I did, and was able to contribute on a really good team. We were conference champs that year. So it was a big time start to a year. Definitely not the way I wanted to start my high school career though.
Yeah. It sounded like it ended the way you wanted to start it though, which is good. Getting called up from the minors to the majors. Obviously a good thing, but you mentioned that AAU team, you know, Barnstormers have a history of, you know, having some really, really good teams, but you know, you threw out a couple names there of some absolute studs. What was that like, you know, and what would you say, you know, a couple things you learned playing with those guys?
I mean, the biggest thing, to be honest, is you go there and you think you're the best from your area, and it's pretty humbling pretty quick. I mean, you're doing their warm-up lines. We always would warm up 8th grade through 17U. So you've got Jeremy Morgan, Dondre Alexander, Josh Weber are in there. Then you've got I got to think who was 2 years above that. Josiah Coleman, who played at North Dakota, was at Iowa Western. It was Anthony Lindauer who went to High Point. Wesley Staten, who ended up, I don't know if he ended up anywhere, but he had Florida, Iowa State, like top 150 guy. And you see all these guys warming up and you're like, man, I'm not good. You're sitting there and you're like, you know, I can dunk with like a dribble and like I can make an open three. But you see all these guys and we scrimmaged them. So like we're playing them and you think, oh yeah, like they'll take it kind of easy. No, like Jared Utoff is guarding me and taking the ball. And I'm sitting there as an 8th grader and I'm like, man, I'm in over my head. And obviously you don't realize how good he is at the time, right? Because it's spring practice. But, and you see Josh Oglesby shooting 35 footers and just, I mean, it's nothing but net every time. So you go there and you just realize how hard you have to work. And that, like, I got it a little bit from Ellsworth. Like a guy named Malcolm Canada went and played at Auburn after Ellsworth and actually played. He was on one of Bruce Pearl's first couple teams down there. Like I was in the gym with him all the time. And Tone Collier, who went to Texas Southern and played for them quite a bit. Like, so I was in the gym with guys, but it's a whole nother level when you're thinking top 100 guys that national scouts and like North Carolina is coming to watch Jared Utoff. And you're sitting there like, okay, I get to learn from him and compete with him. And you figure out pretty quick where you're at. And if I didn't have that exposure, I definitely would not have grown my game at that level.
I was gonna say, having that exposure is one thing, you know, but actually realizing that you have that opportunity, I feel is another thing. I mean, you know, you could have came in there and, you know, you mentioned Utah was taking the ball from you. You know, there's two ways you can go with that, right? You know, hey, I need to get a whole hell of a lot better, or man, I'm just not good enough for this. And I mean, you know, shut down or whatever, you know, just go back to Al Falls and be, you know, the player you want to be there. So, you know, obviously good that you realize that you can make a couple improvements from that time.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, and when you're traveling around and you see some of these guys, like
Carl Anthony Towns, we played him our 17U year. And you got Coach Cal, you got Coach K, like any coach you can think about is sitting front row. And a bunch of boys from Iowa, we beat them in Milwaukee in the semifinals. And you're sitting there, though, and you're like, okay, this dude's 6'11", shooting step backs, driving it to the hoop, dunking on you. And you're out there, and you're like, I'd never get this. Like, if I was just playing in the NCC, which is a good high school basketball league in Iowa, like, I'm not seeing anything like this to prepare me for what, obviously, like, every kid wants to play at the highest level. I mean, you're not going to be able to do that if you don't go out and play guys that are truly the highest level.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things, a lot of negative things that have been, you know, at least over the last couple of years said about AAU ball, but that's one thing that can never be said about it, that it's not competitive. You know, I think no matter how many AAU teams are out there, no matter how many AAU teams get started, it's always going to be a different competition from, like you said, your high school conference or the NCC, NICL, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. There's going to be different, obviously different competition that, that is good for you as a player to be a part of.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's stuff that can't be replicated. I mean, and then think about the cool places you get to travel. Yeah. I mean, I went to the New York, went to the Bronx. We went to some tournament called the Rumble in the Bronx. And we took a bus out there, and that was probably the most fun trip I've ever been on.
It's a little different.
I mean, we went to DC and saw the monuments too, but we didn't even get out of the bus. It was raining. We're like, oh, that's kind of cool. But like New York City, we're going downtown. We're like, this is sweet.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, we way back in our day, you know, we traveled to probably three tournaments a summer. So not even close to what, you know, happens nowadays and, you know, during your time as well. So yeah, the places you see, and, you know, just those relationships that you form with people, with players that you probably wouldn't have got the chance to if you weren't there.
Oh no, it's crazy. And even looking at it coming back, like there's people that I played against that you just connect with, right? And maybe you only follow each other on Twitter. Like it could be that simple. Right. And now I'm in a spot where I'm recruiting kids, and some of the guys I played and made a connection with, whether they were coaches back then, players, program directors, whatever, like you come into them, now all of a sudden I'm calling them and I'm like, hey, you got this kid, this kid, this kid. And it's like, it's all that full circle stuff, right? You're like, oh, this never matters. I played this guy when I was a 16 under at some tournament in Milwaukee. Like I'll never talk to him again. And then all of a sudden I'm calling him twice a month, seeing if he's gotten any players because he's running some AAU program out of Chicago.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's interesting, but it's fun, man. I had some of the most fun times playing basketball in the AAU circuit for sure. So know exactly what you're talking about there, but well, hey, let's get back to the NCC and the Iowa Falls High School. Obviously started off on the JV squad, which maybe a little bit of controversy there. Maybe we can bring on the old head coach sometime and we can maybe talk about that. But at the end of those 4 years, you know, I'm looking at, you know, all these stats, you know, almost 2,000 points, all-time leading scorer at Iowa Falls Alden, you know, runner up to in Mr. Basketball. Who was Mr. Basketball that year?
Wyatt Lowhouse, one of my teammates and friends at the time. I knew he was getting it. There was no way I was touching that thing with Iowa City West record.
Well, then maybe not. I guess maybe not the biggest surprise, which may be better. But you know, obviously, those in high school is a time where you're learning a lot, where you're changing a lot as a person, as a player. You know, what would you say? Maybe one or two things that changed in your game from right when you got on the court for JV until, you know, that buzzer sound your senior year?
The importance of everybody else, the team aspect. And I know that sounds super minor, but like everybody thinks when you're really good, it's, oh, he can go do this or he can go do that. I don't care how good a guy is. If he doesn't have teammates that he values and respects and they know that he values and respects them, I mean, it's nothing, right? It's just like a coach. I mean, a head coach can have all the talent in the world, and if those players don't trust him or he doesn't trust them, it doesn't matter. And I just think that trust and the how genuine you got to be in relationships, how genuine you have to make an effort. Like there are a lot of times where I made some passes in my senior year where I felt like it should have been caught. And to be honest, it was a lot of times I had to look and be like, hey, that's my bad. Shouldn't have thrown it. And just learning that you got to lead people, and sometimes leading people is taking the blame, and learning that at a young age. And it's not always correction to them, but it's taking some ownership and kind of teaching. But I mean, just that, and then there's always people watching. I think that probably is the bigger thing. I mean, as a sophomore, to be honest, I was cocky as crap. I thought I could walk around. It didn't matter where I was going. It was, this is, well, I'm going to have 20. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I'll never forget, we're playing Clear Lake. And I had just gone through, like, my recruitment had started off quick, but I had had some stuff happen that as a 16-year-old kid, you're not, like, some up and downs, interest there, not there, whatever. You're not ready to handle it and still take care of business all the time, I feel like. And I know I wasn't. But, like, I get a technical versus Clear Lake. And we're playing, and they're just face guarding me this whole time. And it's 5'10 kid named Gavin Sheekley. And I remember his name because he was – as soon as they scored or we got a rebound, he found me. It didn't matter where I was on the court. I could be on at their three-point line, and he was just going to be standing in my chest. And I got a technical, and it carried on. I had a terrible end of the year. We went to Webster City, lost the conference championship, lost in the dungeon that they had. That was the three levels, no lighting, flickering lights under one hoop.
But great. Jeff Jim, heck yeah.
Great basketball gym for high school, though. Awesome environment. Like, but lost there, lost the conference championship. And at the end of that year, I was the leading scorer in the conference, and I got second team. And I remember Hutchinson pulling me in, and he goes, maybe if you weren't such an a-hole, you know, people wouldn't do this. He goes, talent-wise, it's not a question. He goes, everyone looks at you. He goes, all these kids that come to our youth camp, they're watching you, and he goes, you're acting like a clown. And I was like, kind of looked at him, and I was kind of like a little taken back. But it was, to be honest, it was that check I needed to really mature and grow. And I'm, like I said, I'm lucky. I had guys like Brock Jacobson and Hutchinson and Bridgewater to tell me that, because I needed it. And that was the only way, to be honest, that I really took the growth I did in my game. Because then I realized, you know, it's not all about the stuff you see on TV, like some of the NBA guys where they got to let them know every time they get a bucket, or you got to be selfish and the only way you can impact a game is scoring. It's got to be about you. And that growing and really realizing, like, oh, crap, people are watching, and it kind of is a reflection. And it's like people think you're a clown, and you go out and it's like you get second team, and you know talent-wise you should be first team, like production-wise. It was the best thing that ever happened to me, was getting voted second team, though, and having that talk with Hutch. And I just remember Hutch saying, like, I'll literally kick you out of open gyms and just bench you. Like, that's how we're going to do this, and that's how we're going to beat it.
I can see those coaches in the NCC definitely making a statement that way, too, and also scheming towards you as well and getting you frustrated at a young age as well.
Oh, it was as they should have. I mean, I'd have done the same thing. Sitting right now, where I'm at as a coach now, if I ever saw a player like me, I would do everything that they did, and I would 100% vote for me for second team just to send a message.
Well, it also looked like you didn't have a problem scoring. So who'd you hang 50 on? Didn't you have a couple of two 50-point games?
To be honest with you, I can't tell you the first one. The one I remember, because they were so good, was Humble. And I have never been in a zone like that ever again in my life. I mean, it was one of those times where I felt like every time I shot it, like, they're ranked number 3 in the state. They have Jackson Hines. They got Brady Ross, fullback at Iowa for 3 years. And Brady is guarding me. And he's 6 foot, like 240, and just muscle. And he is just beating the crap out of me. But I'm getting my shot off. And then I just remember in the second half, I hit one. And he just looks at me and he goes, dude, stop. Like, he's like, I can't do anything. And I just kind of looked at him, and in my head I'm like, that's the best zone I've ever been in. And it was, we upset him up there, and I still see Coach Moling around. I've seen him around, and he even tweeted me one time randomly, like Mike brought up something and he tweeted at me, and he goes, yeah, didn't matter what we did. And in my head I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, that's like the only time I've ever had it where if I felt like I could have chucked something up looking the other way and somehow would have banked in or something.
That's a fun time. That is a fun time, that zone you talk about, that's for sure.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It was way more fun that we won, though, because we needed that year.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what I was going to say is if we go back to Coach Hutch, as you talk about, you know, credit to him for, you know, sounds like the best player on his team. You know, there are some coaches that would just say, hey, he does what he does, and, you know, he's going to score for us. He's going to help us win, and not really mention that. But, you know, as you said, as you got selected for second team, the best thing to happen to you. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, I feel like one of the reasons maybe why he brought it up to you too was because of that. So, you know, credit to him and credit to you for, you know, just obviously changing. You know, a lot of young kids will, you know, we talk about all the time on here how, you know, maybe more specifically on the boys side, come in and think they know everything. You know, coach is just here to whatever, collect paycheck and blow whistles, whatever it is. And, you know, I know more than him. So credit to you too for, you know, changing on that.
Hey, well, I wasn't going home and exactly getting any reinforcement that I was right. Cause there was one time we're walking out of in that same stretch that year, we're walking out of Bishop Garrigan and we just blew the game, just blew it. And in the game, Hutch would said something to me and I talked back to him and he like hit my chin up. And so me and him are walking out of the locker room talking about it as we're going. And it wasn't in a bad way. It was, I deserved it. I need to shut up. But we're walking out and my mom's coming towards him and he'll tell this story all the time. And he goes, yeah, like when that was coming, he goes, I thought for sure I was done. Like, I thought she's going to be like, don't ever do that. And my mom goes, yeah, if he ever does that, hit him harder next time. Like, he needs to listen to you. He needs to shut up and listen to you. And it's like, so when you have that, like when you're being held accountable and then like you can't go home and be like, oh, well, coach is doing this, that always helped too. But no, that story, like he'll tell all the time. We'll always talk about it. He goes, yeah, that's the day I thought my high school coaching career was over. And he goes, your mom just came up and reinforced it. So
that's great. That is great. Well, hey, you know, with all these accolades, with all these points scored, all these stats thrown up there, obviously there comes some recruiting and you mentioned it a little bit. So talk us through a little bit about that recruiting journey for you in high school. You know, how it started and obviously at the end how it did end up ending up here in Des Moines.
Yeah, I mean, I got lucky early, to be honest with you. I got seen at the right times by the right people and I had the opportunity to go to Creighton, UNI, and Drake before I'd even started my sophomore year of high school. And that's a blessing to have one, let alone something like that. And that was obviously back when Creighton was in the NBC. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, it's not all a bad place. I mean, they get 18,000 Missouri right. Valley.
That place.
Thank goodness I did not commit early because me and the Big East, you just, well, put me on the practice dummy because I'm not as athletic as their biggest, slowest guy, let alone anything like that. But, and then, you know, it just progressed. Had 15, 20 offers from low majors, mid majors around the country. Was never athletic enough for Iowa to ever jump. I love Fran to death. I actually coached Patty and Connor both when they were growing up. So I know him. I mean, I saw him last spring when he was watching Jack and, you know, talked to him. And it's just, I was never quite athletic enough for that level. And I didn't understand at that time. But again, now you're kind of in that other seat and you see it. And I wouldn't change Drake for the world because I wouldn't be where I'm at right now at Augustana without Drake. I mean, you go through it and I listen to your guys' one with Reed talking about kind of our coaching carousel that we went through at Drake. I mean, three head coaches in 4 years and every single one of them, I learned something from and I'm still in touch with them today. And, you know, Drake in the end, to be honest, I got sick of the recruiting process. I wasn't on my phone very much when I was in high school. So I didn't like having to answer texts and calls all the time. And Coach Giacoletti got the job at Drake in like April, early April, after Gonzaga got knocked out, hired Coach Rutter, Jeff Rutter. And I'd known Rutt from when he was at Iowa State, because I remember he drove Hoiberg up to watch me when I was a sophomore for a workout. And like, I loved Rutt. I just trust him. He's one of those dudes you just click with because he's a genuinely good dude.
Awesome.
So you click with him. And it was just kind of like, all right, like, I want to be a part of building something. I want to try to rebuild and, you know, help to get a program back to relevancy. And I was able to do it in a place where I could have family. You know, I had a lot of family up in Garner,
down in Grinnell. And then obviously the Iowa Falls Ackley area. So they can come watch. And I think that's cool. And being in a small town, I think that's, people from big cities don't understand it because they don't understand that your aunts, uncles, and cousins come to everything you do. Like a fall league in Iowa or a fall league in South Dakota, like each kid's got like 12 people there.
Yeah.
And in the big city, a kid gets there himself and maybe a parent comes, maybe a sibling, and that's it. But but you have a fall league in Iowa and you've got a crowd of 300 there to watch it. So just having that and having them there really in the end led to Drake. That along with trust with those coaches.
So then you make your decision to ultimately come and be a Drake Bulldog. What do you remember about stepping on campus and then some of the toughest transitions for you that freshman year?
Strength. I should have listened to Coach Norm and Coach Hutchinson and Brock right away. I never touched a weight in high school. And when I did, I went in and I did bench and it was like three sets of like four and maybe like some curls, which by the way, none of it was a lot of weight at all anyways. So like, that's the biggest thing, just cause you're so behind, everyone's so good and everyone's so athletic. And to be honest, everyone was the best player wherever they're coming from. So you go there and like your margin for error goes from, you could miss two shots in a row or make two mistakes in a row and you're fine, to all of a sudden you make two mistakes in a row and you could lose your next run. And that was huge. And I knew I was pretty much going to redshirt my first year. So like my big thing was strength. I mean, I put on 35 pounds my freshman year at Drake, which in the end, I think was probably a little too much, but shoot, I don't at all blame it. I love Coach Birch from Drake. Like he's, that dude kicked my tail 4 days a week for that entire year. But just learning all that on-court stuff that I talk about. And then you think about scouts. As soon as you get to mid-year, everyone's got a scout on you. All those moves that you're good at, that you're like, oh, man, if I get there, well, yeah, good luck getting there by the end of the year. Unless you're Reed Timmer and, like, you're just getting – like, you're going to get there regardless. Like, I had a left shoulder, right-hand hook. Eventually, they learned I was going left shoulder, right-hand hook. And if I didn't, I was spinning back. Like, literally every time, that's what I did. So just that adjustment, it was huge. And it's hard, but if you can do it and make the adjustment and learn to accept a role, like there's really two guys that can do whatever they want on a given team.
Right.
Everyone else is a role player. So like the earlier you can come to grips with that, the more success I feel like you give yourself a chance to have.
How do you think that helps you now on the coaching side of things? I feel like when you look at some of the great coaches you mentioned, they're all role players in their day. And so what is it that you think you take from that experience to be able to help the young guy coming on campus now?
To be honest, I don't think there's a role that I can't relate to. I've been the guy who's a bench player and a scout team guy. Like every day you're showing up, you're running the other team stuff, trying to earn minutes, knowing full well you might not play. I've been the guy where you're that role player, that sixth, seventh man, and you're getting consistent minutes, but you know, you're still on that shorter leash and that guy in front of you. And then my last year, I went to Grandview and was kind of a guy again. And you know, you've got that free reign. And the fact is I just feel like there's not a position that a guy that I'm coaching can tell me about on the court that I haven't been in, that I can't relate to in some way, shape or form, maybe not offer advice, but at least offer perspective. From a personal standpoint and ways to approach it or not approach it. Things I learned and things I definitely wouldn't do again in the same sentence, but.
Well, and it sounds like you went through that growth and transformation in the high school level too. I mean, obviously, you know, you're out there leading the state in scoring. Like you said, just kind of maturing throughout the 4 years in high school. And so you have to, on the recruiting trail, there has to be a little bit of that too, where you're kind of, you're understanding what some of these high school kids are going through, you know, and catching a kid early who might be sophomore, junior year, and then just watching them grow and understanding like, hey, this kid might have some potential because I've just seen his maturity.
Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you what, the biggest thing, and it's that is goes with it, and it goes from being a player, now a coach, you just can't BS kids. If you BS kids, you're screwed. Like they read through it so fast. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I remember the stuff I said. Like, you remember certain coaches or
whatever, no matter, it could be teachers, it could be anything. They're like, they kind of just trying, they're trying to like fluff your feathers. They're like, oh yeah, like you're this, you're that. And you're kind of sitting there. And like, I remember, for example, like there was one time there was a coach, he's like, oh yeah, we don't think you need a red shirt. Like you're coming in there. And I'm sitting there on the other end of the phone. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like I'm 6'8", 175 pounds. I am not touching the court on any good team at all. In a bad team, barely at this weight. Like I'll get pushed and I'll be in the fifth row of the stands like a block shot. Like it's not gonna go well. But just being able to know that you have to be honest and upfront, because they just read through it. I mean, you can only fool someone for so long, and then eventually you're gonna tie yourself in a knot that you can't get out of.
Well, and then plus, I mean, now all of a sudden you're trying to keep up with what you said and backpedaling. And so it's like, let's just shoot it straight from the beginning, get on campus. And hey, I told you what it was going to be like. And so we definitely appreciate that approach. But so going back to Drake, putting on, did you say 35 pounds in your redshirt year?
Yeah.
So what, like, what did you change? Is that straight weight room or just really hitting nutrition hard or both? Or what was it about that, that you were able to put on 35 pounds?
Yeah, so I lifted 4 days a week, and it was heavy pretty much every week or every day of the week. And then I was on like a 7,000 calorie diet that I had to literally write down everything that I ate, and I would meet with Coach Birch. So I had these protein shakes, and Reed can speak to this because I roomed with him first 2 years in college. And I had this protein shake, like the Mass Gainer, and it's like 1,000 calories, just the powder. And then I would put orange juice and I would just shake them up, and it'd be getting to the point by like the third one before I go to bed. Like I'm eating a peanut butter sandwich, I'm shaking that thing up, and Reed's just looking at me and he goes, dude, you look miserable. And it's like, yeah, like I don't have any way that I can possibly put this down. Like there is no way this protein shake is going down. And it was just constant discipline. But like once weight started going on and you start to see some of the advantages of it, it makes it easier. But I tell you what, like the first month, I don't know how offensive linemen do it. Like all those guys that go to play the O-line or D-line in college, and they're like 240 in high school, and then the next time you see them, they're like 300 pounds. Like I couldn't eat like that. One year was enough for me. Like I'll never eat like that ever again in my life.
So hitting up the campus calf much too then, or just trying to take in as much as you could?
Oh, we had unlimited swipes. So it was a breakfast 2 times a day, lunch. And it was like a lot, those were just smaller meals. So I'd load up one plate and really eat that meal, like breakfast before my morning class. As soon as I got out of my morning class, I'd either get it to go or I'd get another plate. Lunch, same thing. I'd get a wrap before practice, and then dinner, I would just sit in there and I'd eat like 5 or 6 plates just until I didn't want to move.
I'm laughing about this because that was exactly me my freshman year, you and I. That is exactly what I had to do. Just tons and tons of calories. You know, I honestly wish I could do a little bit more of that now, but they don't fall off as easy nowadays.
Oh, no. We talk about COVID, how hard it was. We talk about how hard it was on coaches. I was the heaviest I'd ever been last year, and I'm like, okay, this isn't good. Like, I wish I could have done this when I was in college, but I definitely don't need to do this right now.
Yeah, it changes a little bit the older you get down the road, that's for sure. But so your senior year, your grad transfer year, you ended up at Grandview. But when you were done playing basketball, then what were you at on the scales?
Oh, when I finished at Grandview, I was like 215, 220. Because I tore my labrum my last year at Drake. And I just never got it fixed because I knew I wanted to coach. And I'm like, I'm not going to put myself at a chance where I got to go through some of the most grueling rehab for like 1 year. So I was like, forget it. It was my left hand anyway. Like J.R. Blount will tell you I never used it, so it doesn't matter. But it was that. And so I was like 215. So I didn't lift as much. Like when I was at Grandview, like I did stuff enough to maintain strength, but it wasn't like to that point. At that point, I'm a 23-year-old guy where they're like, hey, we just need you to be able to make it through the season without breaking down. And I'm like, no kidding. Like, I'm hoping I can make it through the preseason before breaking down.
Yeah, it's amazing. You start to get older. I mean, it's now to the point where Adam and I would love to go play some noon ball, but I'm afraid of breaking down doing that. So it changes. But So you're Drake, as you look at your experience as a whole at Drake, what are one or two of the things in which that you hold in highest regard, or and then situations and or moments in which that you'll always cherish?
Definitely the accountability aspect, in a weird way, having three head coaches. I will forever, with my career path, be in debt to that. And if you would have asked me that 5 years ago, I think I would have told you you were crazy to hear me say that. But the connections that I had, and all of them were good people. All of them are good people. Having those connections, seeing different point of views from where I'm at right now, I'll actually cherish that forever. Moments, I mean, beating you and I at home, beating Wyatt and those guys, like, that was big for me because I was a little tired of, I mean, they're basically Barnstormer you. Like, right. They got like eight of them on their roster all the time, it feels like. And I was a little tired of like not being able to say anything, and kind of got, I did get a tech down there or at home when we beat them. And I'll never forget Nico, like, Coach Medved takes me out and he goes, "What did you say?" I was like, "Coach, I didn't even say anything." And Reed looks at me, Reed goes, "Casey, like, come on, dude." Like, I was right there. Like, Reed's pushing me, telling me to shut up. And I was just psyched up because there's like 3 minutes left. We're up 9. They made a bad call. I thought it was probably the right call, but they made a bad call on us. And I'm all psyched up. I'm like, I finally got one in my grasp. And like, I'll never forget that. But more than anything with that group, just having some success that last year. We went through a lot together. And, you know, part of it was self-inflicted. Like, you got to mature. You got to listen to coaches a little earlier. Do what they ask you. Being on the coaching side of it, I kind of get it a little more now. That how important that 1-14 buy-in is. But we had a great group of dudes, and just to have some success to get excitement back in the Des Moines area. Like, I mean, we played Abilene Christian and we had like 5,000 people there. I mean, they only did the lower bowl. I mean, it was a CIT game. Like, come on. How many CIT games do you see that are full?
Right. Like,
that doesn't happen.
No.
So just to get that excitement back. And then, to be honest, to see Coach DeVries and his staff, like, I know there wasn't any holdover really, and like everything works out the way it's supposed to, right? Because it wasn't no fault of him, it was just all of us kind of like, all right, like, come on, we've gone through three already, like, we don't need to go through four at the same place. But like, him and his staff, Coach Richter and Coach Blunt that left, and obviously Coach Woodley was there, like, for them to do what they did their first year and literally not miss on one dude that they bring in, that was honestly, that's one of the coolest things, I think, for me personally, because we kind of got a buzz going, and like, what they did, they just have built on that buzz, and now like, they're Des Moines team. And I like to look back at the alma mater, like, that's really cool to see, because when I went there, it was literally like, I'm gonna go to the Iowa State game, I'm gonna go over to Iowa City for the Iowa game. And I still know there's part of that, but like, the momentum and buzz they have is awesome to see.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on the pod several times, but just this, the steps from the hope that came with Giacoletti, that from a fan perspective, obviously disappointed in what ended up happening with that, but then the step that came with Nico, and like you said, just the excitement and the energy that started, you could feel it start to come back a little bit, and now, I mean, it's just, I mean, trajectory is on a whole new level, and obviously everyone's super excited, and like you said, the buy-in in the house has been there for a long time, but now the buy-in in the community is starting to happen with Drake, and so it is fun to see from this side of it, and I imagine for you, it has to be something that you really cherish and are proud of as well, and so you've mentioned it a few times through here, so when did you know that coaching, because you studied finance in school, is that correct? And then, but when did you know that coaching was the deal?
Hey, I'm not going to lie to you. Shout out to Ty Patton on this, who actually just stepped down for Drake, because he must not ever switched it. Smart of him too. But I lasted in finance until I took my first finance course and got about a 60.001%. And I'm pretty sure the professor passed me because he knew I was incapable of learning it. Like, it was, I got in there, I'm like, oh yeah, like, I'll do it. Like, my mom's a banker, like, that fits. You know, I'm good with high school math. Like, can't be that much harder.
yeah, it was not for me. So I ended up just being marketing. But now to answer your question about the coaching part of it, it was kind of when it all started with like when Rutt took over as interim coach. And again, I kind of bounced that role. Like I started a couple games. There were times in the Valley when I was playing 20, 25 minutes, and there were times where I was playing like 10 or 15. And I was always a high IQ guy. Like I knew what was going on. I wasn't always most athletic to get it done, but like I always could relay a message, and I had the respect of our guys because I worked hard, and they knew that no matter what, I was going to show up, do my job, regardless of what my role was. So like kind of Rutt almost even bringing me on, like in a sense, like a player coach. Now, not a player coach in the terms of like he's asking me what to do, but like there's certain things when I'm talking to, like I'd be talking in huddles, we come to timeouts. And like, if he came in, like if I saw him coming in, I was getting out. Like, I'm not dumb. Like, you don't ever try to speak over the head coach. Like, I know that. But there were times like where I wouldn't see him and he would be like, he'd let me finish. And I'd kind of look back like, wait, what? And like me and Rutt would just have conversations. And I'll never forget, we're playing Iowa State, obviously in the Big Four Classic. And it was when they were really, really good. And we had them, we were right there with them. It was like a 4-point game till the very end when Naz Long went absolutely nuts from three to end. And I go up to Rutt and I'm like, Rutt, the way they're guarding Nick, like we just gotta, it was like power four. So it was like just a little post ISO play. I'm like, we just gotta run this. And he looks at me and he goes, all right, let's do it. And like just kind of that, like you have those little small things that build up into like you're seeing the right things. And then I knew, like as my body kind of went on, I had no aspirations to play, nor would I have been able to, for as far as like body holding up and anything. And it just kind of built from those moments where I was like, oh, like, you know, this coaching thing isn't all bad. And like I coached AAU with the Barnstormers and getting a little taste of it too and building into it. Like that between AAU and the role that Rutt allowed me to have, like, I mean, I just developed a passion for it, I guess, because it was still basketball. And right. My passion was always basketball, but I just started to get to the point where it's like, eventually everyone gets to the point where they're not good enough. Like right. Some people it's in high school, some people it's middle school, college, wherever, JUCO, you know, you don't know. Some people it's pro, like my guy Reed, like his was kind of like, he reached some top levels in Europe and you know, it's done bouncing now. Like, yep. And that part of it, like it happens for everyone, no matter how good you are, it eventually comes to an end. And like the moment I started to kind of realize it was coming to an end and kind of realized I could relay my passion into coaching, it just started to take off for me. Like I started asking questions that I'm sure most players don't ask. And I'm sure it was annoying at times too, but give it that way.
That's great. Cause I mean, that's what it takes. I mean, a lot of times I'm sure Rutt saw it in you before you maybe even saw it in yourself. And that's usually kind of how it goes is, you know, as someone from the outside looking in can normally find it a little bit quicker. But so then once the playing days were done, how did the coaching come about? Was Augustana the first move or how did you get into the ranks of the college game?
To be honest, at Grandview starting about February, I sent about 400 emails out. Schools of NAIA, JUCO, D2. I had my master's. Finished my master's while I was playing at Grandview because I graduated in 3.5 at Drake. So I'd already started it. So I was able to transfer a couple credits, finish, like I said, in that year. And I did not want to be a grad assistant at all, to be honest. I was like, you know, I've got it. I hate school. Like, I just want to coach. That's all I want to do. And I mean, this is why I say I go back to why I'd never changed my Drake experience. So Coach Rutter worked for Coach Billiter at North Dakota State. He was his assistant coach, head assistant. Coach Thorson, who came in under Nico, I had known Coach from being in the league, the NCC league, the college league, back when Coach was at North Dakota State. And then he was at Minnesota. So in recruiting, they kind of ran into each other. And so I have both of those guys calling on my behalf to Coach B, who was one of the few coaches who emailed me back. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, and he, you know, he said GA spot. Like, I don't really want to do that. Like, but Coach Rutter and Thorson are speaking so highly of him. And then Coach Nico and JR Blount, like, they're all talking highly of him. They're like, hey, he wins. Like, you go there, like, doing this. And then I talk with them, and you know, he's like, you know, we don't treat GAs the same. Like, you're gonna coach. And I was like, yeah, coach, to be honest, I just don't want to do school. And he goes, oh, well, you don't have to. Like, you can just take the GA stipend and you'll just be a really bad paid assistant coach. And I was like, that is perfectly fine with me. I am okay with that. We'll make that work. And I ended up here, and it's the best place I could have ended up. But it's, like I said, and I always tie back to it, but you just look back at all these things that you think are insignificant or you think they're frustrating. And I wouldn't be where I'm at right now, you know, a full-time assistant at 26 at one of the best D2s in the country, working for one of the best coaches, regardless of level, without all the stuff that happened previously.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it way earlier in the pod, but just the coaching community, basketball community in general. And like you said, you just now all of a sudden things kind of come full circle. And those guys that you played with, or those connections, or went on those road trips with, now they're the guys you're calling on to get players and calling on to get jobs. And, you know, before you know it, then your player's going to be calling on you to help hook them up with a job. And so it's just crazy on how everything kind of comes full circle in this game of basketball, and how the community of coaching and players are just so lenient on each other. And, but that's also what makes it great. So how are things looking this year? What are you guys most excited about with the squad this year?
We got a good group of vets and young guys, to be honest with you. And I know that's what a lot of coaches say, but we've got two guys who are a sixth year and a seventh year guy who are both coming back to play. I mean, one of them, I joke with them all the time. I'm like, hey, dude, you can't afford another COVID year because you're going to have to get health insurance. And I don't think that is covered by scholarship. Not to the point of full health benefits, but no, we have a great mix of young and vets. We have vets that came back to win, vets that it matters, the tradition matters, and we've got young guys that are really talented and starting to figure it out and have great potential to be able to contribute and help at some capacity this year. And I mean, when you have young guys that have the ability to learn from all conference guys and guys that are, I mean, show up everyday dudes and work hard and do things the right way on and off the court. I mean, you're pretty lucky to be in that position as a coach.
Oh, absolutely. That's great. That sounds like a lot to look forward to for this year. And so then you specifically, what's your role on the staff? What are some of your main areas that you cover?
With Coach Builder and kind of the way he does things, you know, recruiting wise, we recruit as a staff. Obviously there's probably always going to be someone that has a connection or whatever it might be to kind of get you in the door, but we recruit as a staff, and that's what we do. It's not a my guy, your guy, his guy. It's a staff. We want the kid to know the whole, and that's like where my transparency comes from, right? Like I tell you, you know, we're not going to BS a kid. We're just going to be kind of straight up with him, and what we tell him is what it is. But then, I mean, travel, gear, all that stuff. I do a lot of that. Scouts, we break evenly. Coach has us that all sorted out. And then, you know, coaching on the floor, I've got the bigs. I tell them I've become a way better player since I became a coach. You know, ever since then, you're like, oh yeah, trust me. Like if I could get to this, you could definitely get to this move. Like, but no, just working that way. And then obviously film, a lot of those responsibilities we split pretty evenly, to be honest with you. And that's just the way coach runs his program. And shoot, I won't argue with him because he's been pretty successful, but getting experience in a lot of things, but focusing on a couple, like I said, with that kind of that travel and that gear and some of that logistics stuff.
Good. So then what's the goal? What are we working towards?
I wish I could tell you. I always used to think it was going to be just like D1 head coach, right? Like I get into it and it's like, just when you go to, like when I went to play at Drake, it's like, oh, I want to be all conference. Like I want to be a pro. Like I want to be the very highest level, or what's perceived as like the highest level as I could be. And you know, the more I'm around it, I don't really know. D2 is pretty pure. Like you can still get a lot of really good players and you got to develop them. Like there's certain, obviously there's reasons, like whether it's academics, a kid chooses to come D2, whether it's he's really tall and really skilled, he's just a half step slow, like whatever it may be. But like you still get really, really good players. And there's good, obviously there's good college basketball at every level. Like, anyone who talks down on a D3 NAIA game, I would love to see them go actually watch the game and get a grasp for how good those players are. I mean, if you're playing college basketball, you're legit. You can go. Like,
well, I think even just go and watch a practice too. Like, yeah. You think that, oh man, you know, D2 or D3, you know, these aren't, but go watch practice, early season practice, watch those guys compete. And you've said it before, everyone there was the best player on their high school team, you know? And so now trying to figure out where they fit in, how they fit in, and bring everybody together. It's, if you're playing at the next level, there's a reason. And so, well, that's good, Coach. No, excited about that. We'll be excited here to watch your journey. Obviously watch the squad here, as we get back to a little bit of normalcy too.
No, yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah. Hey, before we let you get out of here, we like to end our podcast with a little section we call Rapid Fire. Brian's going to hit you with a couple questions, some about hoops, some probably not about hoops. And you just hit us with what comes to the top.
Gotcha.
All right. First one we always start with is, and I'm gonna go twofold on this one for you. So favorite visiting gym or arena? Let's hear the playing one. And in your short coaching career, what's your favorite one you've had a chance to coach in?
Oh, well, playing is Wichita State. That place was incredible. I mean, 30 minutes before, they're all in there and they've got newspaper clippings of your last loss, last time you played them and you lost by 40, and the ground is shaking and your rim is broke, supposedly on accident. I don't know. I guess we'll see. And they're fixing it 15 minutes before and they've got a DJ. I mean, that was incredible. I've never seen anything like that type of venue. As a coach, man, I haven't had the opportunity. I've only gotten 1 year really going with that.
You didn't have a bunch of fans too, did you? Yeah.
Like, I haven't had the opportunity to go to a place like Northern State that, you know, they sell out every game. I mean, Mankato is a nice arena. Yeah. I'll tell you, to be honest, the hardest place to play, Upper Iowa.
Yeah.
Of all places.
Yeah.
They don't miss. They go there and it's like, it's just flamethrowers, just all over, just knockdown, knockdown, knockdown. And I'm different. Like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, hardest gym to coach in, Upper Iowa. Like, just because of the way they shoot there. I mean, they went 43-78 from three in two games versus last year. And I'm like, how do you guard that? Like, over 20 of those were contested.
It's probably not going to change a whole lot this year either. They're going to be pretty good. So,
oh, yeah. They got with Jarice and Joe coming back, and then you got Hilmer running that show. I mean, no, yeah, they'll be really good. They'll be really good.
Well, Brooks will be appreciative of the kind words. So,
I got to tell a story about that one. He let me beat him in fifth grade when you and I used to, Coach Rutter brought him, and he used to travel school to school. And I got a bucket on him. So, like, I'll definitely give him a shout out where it is. But I did, I think I did score that bucket in like fifth grade.
I'm happy you told me about that. I'll have to ask him about that next time I talk to him.
I doubt he'll remember, but I remember it like it was yesterday.
That's awesome. All right. Favorite hoop shoe?
Kobe sixes, not even close.
Oh, man. Love the sixes. That's a good one. I'm right there with you on that. All right. So, who's the GOAT? Who's the greatest of all time?
LeBron.
He's in that age bracket, Adam. He's right there.
I think when it comes to everything he can do, obviously I didn't see Michael, so like I can't speak to that. But like everything he can do is incredible.
Yeah. Well, and I think that maybe the biggest argument for LeBron is the guys he's doing it against too. I mean, the league is just as nasty as ever. So. That's something that speaks to LeBron. But all right, did you have a pregame ritual or anything superstition that you had to do before a game at any level?
I mean, at high school, I had a bag of Pichos with Jake Campbell. Me and Jake Campbell go buy a bag of Pichos in every game. I'd have a bag of Pichos about 30 minutes before the game, and I'd eat Oreo fluff on the bus or within like an hour and a half. So not anything healthy. I don't know what it did, but it was consistent.
Wow, the Pichos, huh? That sounds like a good one. You gotta have something, man. That's all that really matters. Okay, so you spent a lot of time down here in Des Moines. Who had the best pizza while you're down here?
Fong's.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
And now they got one right by campus.
Like, oh, 30 pounds.
Of course I leave and it's right by campus then.
30 pounds would have been easier with thongs right there.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Iowa Falls, where's the spot to eat? We get a chance to go up and watch some cadet basketball, watch Collison, young Collison coach. Where do we got to stop before the game up in Iowa Falls? They got some spots there.
Lost Floors. It's not even close. Right as you're coming in off Highway 20, just go straight to Lost Floors, pull off right before Highland Golf Course, and you will not be disappointed.
That's the spot, huh? Yeah. A couple cold ones too before the game or what?
Absolutely. Jesus is awesome. He's the man. He opened it when I was in like elementary school, and the food just keeps getting better every time I go back.
All right, Adam, make sure you jot that one down. We'll have to check that out. All right, two more. We'll get you out of here, Coach. What does it mean to you if someone has the shooter's touch?
You get every role that you can possibly imagine. The shot where you hit front rim and somehow it bounces 3 feet in the air and it still manages to drop in. Reed Timmer had it. I don't know how he did it. I do take credit. I tell him all the time. I go, hey, man, I set you a lot of screens. But I had nothing to do with all those rolls you got where that thing just fell in. And there's some people that they just put that thing in the bucket. And that's what it is to me.
No, that's
he had a shot against Missouri State from like half line that did that, didn't he?
Yeah, I set a terrible fake ghost screen for him. And I literally tell him, we joke all the time. I literally was FaceTiming with him earlier today. And I go, yeah, so like how much of your points like can I somehow transfer to my career total? And he just laughs and he goes, hey, everyone's got their role. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And I said, you played yours pretty well. So I guess I can live with that.
You would have, if setting screens would get the hockey assists, you know, you got the two passes, you would definitely have way more assists. I tell you what, Reed, as far as coming off screens, I mean, he was like the left-handed Rip Hamilton. I mean, he just weaved way in and out those screens and was ready to fire all the time.
Hey, for a guy that only went left and everyone knew he was only going to go left, he still always got left. And I'm like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, come on, guys. Like, at least make him shoot a one dribble pull up to his right. Like, come on. Like, we know it. But no, yeah, he's phenomenal. He's probably the best shooter I've ever played with.
He could fill it up, still can, for that matter. But it also kind of sounded like maybe that night in Humboldt, you might have had the shooter's touch a little bit too. So yeah. We'll run with that. I mean, and I know you said during that story, but if you play in the NCC, you're going to play against a lot of really good football players. And so you got to be ready to go. Got to have something on your side. So, all right, Coach, last one. We'll get you out of here. What is the best thing about being an Auggie Viking?
Oh, working for Coach Billiter, whether it's learning every day, because I do, I always think like, oh, you know what? I got a pretty good grasp on this coaching thing. And I come back the next day and I learn something every day. And then hearing his stories. I mean, the guy, he coached Ron Artest, Felipe Lopez, signed AC Law, like was at Arizona when it was Kenny Lofton, Steve Kerr, Sean Elliott, like all that stuff. And just hearing his stories, I mean, the recruiting stories, the coaching stories. And then you couple that with like the knowledge that he has. I mean, just the growth. And then obviously like being able to enjoy what you do, right? Like everyone talks about it's really cool to like have a job you like, but you love it. And like, you want to come to work every day. Being a college coach and loving coming to work every day, cause it is every day, is pretty nice.
It certainly makes it a lot easier when you love what you do and you're on a good staff and you know, feel like you fit and feel like you're making a difference. And so, Coach, we appreciate you taking some time and coming on, sharing your story. It was a good one. We had a lot of fun with you. Can't wait to see what you guys are able to do this season. We'll be obviously following along as always and keeping up with the action.
Yep, awesome. Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, like as Brian said, Coach, it was great to finally meet you. I feel like being from a similar area, this should have happened earlier, but no better place than the shooter's touch, I guess. So we appreciate your time and good luck this year.
Yep, thank you. Appreciate it.